Hi, I'm Dr. Barbara Byers. Welcome back to part two of our talk about resilience. So last time I said resilience is like a muscle. The more you use it, the stronger it becomes. Resilience anticipates challenges, recognizes emotional amplifiers, if you will, so that you learn to calm yourself down. You recognize those triggers. And it uses the resources that are available. So how resilient are you? I'm gonna fly through this little test. You can look it up online. It's called Response to Stressful Experiences Scale. It's been around a while. Notice how many of these are about renewing the mind, and just kind of answer what you tend to do during life's stressful events. Okay, one, take action to fix things. Two, not give up trying to solve problems you think you can solve. It's important to learning resilience. Three, find a way to do what's necessary to carry on. Four, pray or meditate. Five, face your fears. In other words, do not avoid, like we like to do sometimes. Six, find an opportunity for growth in everything stressful. Seven, calm and comfort yourself. 8, try to recharge yourself before the next challenge. Know how to take care of yourself and rest. 9, see problems as challenges that will make you better. 10, look at a problem in a number of different ways, so just don't get fixated and narrow. 11, look for creative solutions to the problem. 12, put things in perspective. We get so emotionally reactive sometimes. Realize I'll have times of joy and times of sadness in the cycle of life. 13, be good at determining which situations are changeable and which are not. 14, find meaning from the experience. 15, find strength in the meaning, in the purpose of my life. 16, know I'll bounce back. 17, expect that I can handle difficulties. 18, learn important and useful life lessons. 19, understand that bad things can happen to anyone, not just me. 20, lean on my faith in God. 21, draw upon lessons learned from past mistakes. That's called transfer learning. 22, practice ways to handle it better next time. So those are just key indicators of practicing resilience. It gives you a little broader definition of what I'm talking about when I talk about resilience. All right, so I wanted to talk about key habits of emotionally resilient people. This is what we're aiming for. This is what we need in our lives to develop this wonderful muscle. Okay, one, confront rather than avoid fears. Oh gosh, avoidance is such a big deal, and it will not help us to be more resilient. It helps us just to turn in when we keep avoiding, and we develop these fear-based habits, these fear-based thoughts, these anxieties. We need to face our anxieties, and we need to learn to confront things well. Say things like, may we talk about this? May I give you some feedback? Can we talk this over? Not everyone will be receptive, but you learn each time you do it. Second thing is reward substitution. So we learn to substitute something healthy for something that is unhealthy in our cravings. Last time I talked about a brownie. Well, a brownie is okay once in a while, but mostly I need to substitute that for an apple or a piece of cheese or, you know, something that would be better for my body, maybe some protein. It helps when we make those substitution, it really helps the brain overcome impulsive eating, impulsive substance use, abuse, we should say, disorders. Every time we gain a little, every time we make a decision, because a habit is based on many decisions made over time. Three, we need to learn to act quickly to calm emotional uproar. So when our emotions get very elevated, I mean like anger or, you know, some kind of reactivity, before they get up and running, we've got to learn to turn off that acute adrenal response to stress, because that's the amygdala in the brain just reacting. We got to put the brakes on when it's in overdrive. And there's strategies to learn how to do that. Okay, the fourth thing is we learn to reframe. We all have anxieties, but we've got to reframe our thinking, our believing self, and we overcome the what if thinking. We replace that by what is happening? What is happening right now? And in that way, we can sort of decatastrophize it, because we tend to catastrophize things. That's hard to say. And it'll calm the overactive brain. Fifth is overcoming anxiety. I think I've done a couple of podcasts on anxiety already. One of the ways that we can help our anxiety is we process our worries by writing them out, by praying about them, by talking to friends, sharing with a confidant, a wise confidant, and by limiting, you know, boundarying ourselves. There are things we don't have control over, and we just need to recognize that. I loved Charlie Brown said this, my anxieties have anxieties. And we need to learn humor, to use humor to curb our anxieties. Humor keeps us sane. Laughing at ourselves, laughing at situations, laughter, research shows it contributes so much to our happiness and to our resilience. So I like this quote by Reba McEntire. To thrive, you need three bones, a wishbone, a backbone, and a funny bone. We need desire, we need will, and we need humor. All right, the sixth thing is we need to learn to overcome unproductive anger. Scripture says, be angry and sin not. We need to be angry. Anger is a good emotion until it's bitter and out of bounds and raging. And there are such health benefits of learning to let go of grievances, learning to forgive and handle things more differently. Seventh thing is overcoming sadness. Now, we need to learn to grieve when it's a season where grief is needed. But we want a depression resistance mindset. So when I say overcoming sadness, I'm talking about overcoming chronic depression. We have to tell ourselves these problems are not going to last forever. And we need to learn to reappraise things, to think about them differently, change our interpretation, change our emotional meaning about things so our response to the situation is different. If we think about it differently, the response is different. We don't need to avoid it, and we certainly don't want to ruminate. We don't want to get introspective. It is just such a dead end. I have a podcast on introspection too. Instead, we learn to reappraise and relabel. We look to others for social support. We use problem solving, acceptance. I'll talk about that in a minute. So the eighth thing is we reduce cravings. Why are some cravings so much stronger than others? Well, it's the dopamine. Many substances of abuse increase dopamine activity. Alcohol, tobacco, marijuana, opioids, stimulants, sedatives, and dopamine just makes us feel good. So compulsive bad habits or addictions, it's hard to define when a bad habit actually becomes an addiction sometimes, but they're learned. They're learned because the addictive substances all increase dopamine production, and that fires the neurons in the brain, and it tricks the brain into thinking, oh, I just got a big reward here. So I want more, I want to do it again, and so on. But when we become habituated, you know, too much of a good thing kind of actually just neutralizes the whole reward system. So to curtail it, we need to choose good pleasures, but we need to make them last longer. For instance, you think about overeating or something like that. You want to eat slower and then do the 10-minute rule. When you get a little bit full and you want to eat some more, just wait 10 minutes. And often you'll feel satisfied. Okay, we use the prefrontal cortex to control the cravings, all right? The same tools that can be used to decrease negative emotions actually decrease cravings. We reframe it, we reappraise it, we rethink it, we step back, we consider the long-term consequences, we engage the prefrontal cortex, And that deactivates the reward circuit for the bad things. 9, this is a biggie. We generate positive emotions. It's called, in psychological terms, acquired optimism. Acquired optimism. And we are looking forward to life, to joy, to enjoyment. We're finding sources of humor and amusement and laughter in everyday life. It can become, acquired optimism can become an automatic way of thinking. You know, we hear the power of positive thinking and all that. There is truth to that. There is truth to that. It actually elevates our mood and improves our sleep and reduces worry. And my favorite verse concerning this really is, you'll be familiar with this probably, is Philippians 4:8. Whatever things are true, whatever things are honest, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, there's any praise, think on these things. He's giving us a prescription here. Here's what you think about, what's beautiful, lovely, good, true, right, and just. That sounds pretty optimistic, doesn't it? We don't have to set our mind on the negative things. Even when we hear things in the news or things happen around us, we believe in God's sovereignty and His goodness, His faithfulness, and His beauty. So we have every reason to be optimistic. And I'm not talking about some kind of fake optimism, okay? We learn to identify pessimistic thoughts. We learn to dispute them. What's the evidence for this belief? You know, what are the alternatives? Am I catastrophizing this? And this is a really helpful thing to do. You envision a positive future. What will it be like with this? In other words, we engage our holy imagination with the Lord, and they've done research on this, and they find this enhances our mood, it decreases doctor visits, it improves test performance. Next time you have a test, just sit for a little bit and imagine that great grade you're gonna make. Dr. Seligman, who is a psychologist, said, optimists are people who tell themselves a good story after a defeat. I like that. Optimists actually take better care of themselves, take action quicker, and believe that their actions are going to have positive benefit. All right, the 10th thing is practice social emotional habits that facilitate resilience. So those interpersonal connections and having good boundaries, having good social IQ, that all helps with resistance. 11, practice awareness of your emotion, and particularly focus on gratitude. Oh, they've done so many studies on gratitude that so helpful. Happy people, resilient people, communicate gratitude to the Lord, to their friends. They communicate love. They strengthen the bonds with people. 12, listen mindfully, non-judgmentally. It is hard to listen to what's being said without being judgmental when someone's telling us their feelings. But people, when they feel really heard, their anger is reduced and their anxiety is reduced. And if they feel heard, it helps them want to resolve conflicts. Doesn't mean you agree with them. Doesn't mean you agree with everything you're hearing, but it means you're hearing. And then listen mindfully, but also speak mindfully. So share without blaming, ask questions. You know, communication matters so much. The 14th thing is acceptance. I wanna just star this one. When things are unlikely to change, resilient people accept their own limitations and those of others. They don't live in regret, they don't live in rumination, they tame that inner critic, and it's just, acceptance is just absolutely one of the most important things we can do for our resilience muscle. Then we also need to develop energizing habits. Physical activity is just a powerful drug. It's better than medicine a lot of times. It curtails our stress. And the last thing I want to say is sleep. Focus on good sleep hygiene. All right, let me just recap about resilience again. It's psychological sturdiness. It's the main tool to protect our brain against stress. And it's when we're able to recover from adversity and grow and mature in it. So thanks for listening. I bless you. I hope you'll join me next time.